came and said, okay, we're willing to do this. But again, the science, you know, the science is saying, this is how many square feet of water capacity we're gonna get really helped, right? And how they're gonna do it. But now let's take this, why not? Why not be the experts on water? I don't know who else is, per se. I know everybody else is immensely concerned about it, but I don't know that anybody's putting the science to it. I didn't even know you guys were doing the science. And that I had never thought about water AI. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. It's a great idea.
All the state apps are images and other stuff.
Well, that New Mexico situation was about they didn't know how dry the soil was.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's, that seems to be like a sound investment. And plus, we're gonna have to make, as you said, more strategic decisions about what to do. And this is just more data.
So the water part is very much AI. It's not just the water, right? The resource management as a whole.
Yeah, yes.
At the region scale, but also it's influenced by all how individual farms use water. So it's not just about the supply, but how it gets consumed and what how the farmers are making those decisions. And so that's why we are looking at not only region scale problem like this, but also on-farm decisions being made. And like, for example, irrigation decisions that are being made. And maybe we can spend a little few minutes on some of those farm-based decisions.
That goes back to the sustainability of individual farmers and the economic perspective, correct? If I hear what Senator Cantwell is saying, is we have a lot of information. We can look at trends.
Right.
But what our group is doing is taking that data, that information, those trends, and then making it applicable and useful for actual farms in very specific regions, correct?
And at the season scale and on a day-to-day basis decision. So to actually take long-term modeling and forecasting information and try to actually interpolate to small time frame, short time frames is a challenging problem.
So that real farmers, real irrigation districts, real conservation districts can actually have something that's useful.
Absolutely.
And not a legal path.
Absolutely.
As much as we love them.
If we can briefly talk about maybe frost mitigation or something.
Okay, sure. So I guess I'm in charge of our operation and intelligence portion of this one. So generally, farmers have to make a lot of decisions, and there's a lot of abiotic factors out there caused a lot by climate change and different, you know, maybe this water stress issue. We also had this past spring in April, we had this huge snowstorm event. Frost event killed a bunch of fruit. So it's just a huge economic loss to the growers. So one of the things we're trying to do is we're fortunate enough to have a collaborating grower who has 30 years of, it's called cold hardiness data. It tells us how susceptible the plant is to death by frost. And we're using that data and putting it into different AI models to try to better understand when these plants are likely to die. Because the mitigation efforts are pretty antiquated. We put out a bunch of heaters in the field. Kerosene, you light them on fire, and there's a few people who use fans to create inversions. They look like giant windmills, but they're actually using a lot of power, so they're producing a lot of power. And so the decision making on whether or not we should be using those mitigation measures is pretty important for farmers to realize real time. And so that's kind of what this farm operations intelligence is working towards, things like this. We're also looking at heat stress, which is super important in apples. It's the number one cause of apple loss in the state, as well as deficit irrigation in a couple different crops to see if we can reduce our water use and still get quality yield. And so one of the things that I'm responsible for with respect to this is instrumenting vineyards and orchards with a bunch of different sensors, so we can kind of figure out what sensors, because there's a bunch on the market and they all do different things, or some of them do the same thing. And we can kind of figure out for growers what is important data for them to grasp, because some things measure soil moisture, some things measure soil moisture potential, which is different than soil moisture. We also have sap flow measurements, which is measuring how quickly the sap is moving to the, through the tree. You have canopy, temperature, humidity, all these things. And it's a pretty big investment, and most of the sensors are hyper-localized to one plant, and we're expecting that one plant to represent the entire field. And so we're trying to figure out, you know, what makes sense for growers, right, with all these products. And so we have this demonstration farm that sort of, that has a double purpose to serve some research objectives, where I have had brought up interns as well as new students. They've learned how to install sensors in the field, learned about the sensors, we work on data connectivity, really working on the workforce development. And so then growers, as well as undergraduate classes, high school classes. We had eighth graders there on Monday, or come out to the field, see all these things installed, and kind of interact with them, kick the tires, so to speak, to see what's going on with, and be exposed to that tech and agriculture.
So I'm going to develop a little more, because he already started talking about that, about how we reach out to our community, and we see that as our responsibility, but also we are so passionate and excited about doing so. And we have different efforts. One of them is working with NESA First Nations program and 4-H program as well. So Jake was talking about the visit that we had this Monday to the Irrigated Agriculture Research and Extension Center at Prosser. So we have 15 kids from the Grandview Middle School and 28 kids from the Guapato Middle School with their respective teachers. And so they built their own Arduino sensors to measure soil moisture, soil temperature, air temperature, radiation, and relative humidity. And so we took all of them to the vineyard at the Rosa field, and they were able to put the sensors in the field and compare their data with the data that we are collecting with the sensors that we buy from these big companies. And it was a great experience because the measurements were really, really, really close. And so we have different purposes there. We want them to be engaged and involved in STEM professions, but also to get excited about what they can do to their own community with things that they are building right now in middle school. Then for 4-H, we're working towards doing more of that, but also how to develop programs for teachers that are not really comfortable with science. So we are working with a representative for the Franklin and Benton County. We are starting a collaboration and looking forward to do that with the teachers that need more support in that area. Then we also have another effort working with growers, farmers, and workers with using field tours, but in during these field days that we call, you have different topics according to the challenge of the season. So if we have heat stress, all of the talks are going to be regarding to that topic, but those are in Spanish and English as well. So we have heat stress, frost mitigation, nutrition, that's super important depending on the crop that you have, harvesting, post-harvesting, and of course technology, the implementation and application of technology in those different orchards or farms. And that is especially important to us because we need to learn what's the best way to deploy what we are developing, all the models and technology that we want to achieve, but how to deploy that to them in a way that's useful for them. Mm-hmm.
So this particular project is unique in the sense that it has the capacity to take the latest of AI computing innovations and also appeal to the underrepresented minorities or underserved communities, mainly rural communities. It's agriculture is something that they grew up with, many of these in their own families. It's easy for them to see the applications. All we have to do is figure out how to get the technology more accessible to them so they actually can get real hands-on experience in their classrooms and be able to pilot that in real fields. And that's a fundamental capability that we are really after developing. So naturally it becomes a career pathway, so to speak, not just IT, but also ag tech and farm tech. where you can possibly bring jobs back into the rural communities, right? And then they, you know, it becomes a more lucrative paying job too, the moment you have some kind of technology skills and things like that. So,
and on what year are you into this grant?
This is, we are in the first, end of the first year, and we are, it's a 5-year project. So part of it is also the, you know,
this,
yeah. Oh yeah, that's the brochure, I'm sorry, this is the brochure that we have itself. So we do have essentially another 4 years on this particular grant, but by no means basically we are looking at it as a 4-year or a 5-year project. It's an institute, and we think AI can serve so many different capabilities, not just agriculture, but agriculture is so rich with neat applications with real tangible realizations of those research goals. Yeah.
Well, one of the things, so Anant and I mean, 2 weeks ago, gosh, we wandered that now, 5 weeks ago, we ran into each other, and he was already saying, we're learning so much in the course of this grant and everything you've heard today. And so we're thinking about what happens in the next 5 years, because that's something I think there's a lot of space for us to be growing at the university. Work with your offices on these large scale grants, then what is the next step of that?
So
how do we mature it? So that is something we'd like to be working with you directly on. So again, you talk about water AI, listening to you talk about
solving
first, listening to the work that you're doing with STEM and kids. I think those are all things that we would want to think about and talk about with you in terms of, well, what does the next 5 years look like?
There are so many things we are not doing. In fact, those would be the natural phase two.
I'm just
lay out, right, some of the core topics, and I would say, you know, understanding soil, the role of soil, which is pretty much like a hidden layer, and understanding how microbes and those contribute to plant health. They need fundamental AI data capabilities. In addition, think of a new farm, like a farmer basically has currently a model of a plant. We are trying to build those initial models in this project, but really tomorrow what we should be really looking at is basically a digital farm, right? A farmer, you know, can try out so many different practices just on the digital space at the start of the season for multiple different water scenarios. And that would really ease so many uncertainties that a farmer has to make what happens if drought hits and at what level, or what happens if we prune the branches in this particular way, how will it impact my labor down the road? So those are all things that can seriously be enabled with AI. Workforce-ready tools, tools that are automatically, you know, ready for adoption at the from get-go when they are being developed, is an important problem. So these, I'm just wanted to highlight a few in the AI space itself, right? So if we can learn from agriculture and how we develop technology in agriculture, because it has three key ingredients: technology, ag domain, the actual domain science, and also the community, the humans that are involved in decision making and actually implementing some of the users of the tools in all different dimensions, right? So if we can learn from that and see how other domains also can benefit, can basically AI for complex systems, complex society with some societal impact in it, right? And so that will be a longer term takeaway from a project like this, right? And so can we basically build these AI systems in a more public serving way, conscious about some of the ethical implications, how we can partner between, say, small-scale brewers or small tech startup with big tech. So this can provide us a lot of those different, at least, approach ideas for us.
Well, there's lots of resources on the table. There's lots of resources on the table for STEM, for, you know, developing the workforce, and scholarship engineering degrees, so you should
yes.
We
have one that probably will need more help, and I don't know, because on top of what we're doing externally, we do that internally, as Jake mentioned, with internships. So we have internships all around the country. We just have the open application, right? So we have people all around the country applying for different scholarships, like here in WSU, but also in Oregon State University. And so what we had 14 students this past summer, And so they have this domain experience with experts in the field, and then we go back to the community because we post the results and all the research that they have done. But a stipend is always something that we need to think about, especially when we have grants, because they deserve a better team, especially when they work super hard. And so I think that our students also deserve better payments, and that's when we need, I think, more support from different places, right?
Well, I think this is, anyway, carrying on from precision agriculture to AI, very natural course, and definitely what one of the aspects, I think, of AI that people are really looking for. They want to know what we're really going to do to drive down cost. And when you look at fuel and fertilizer costs, and people think, what can you do about changing that equation? Obviously, on the automation side, everybody, that's the million-dollar question that everybody's been trying to figure out for some time. And it may be that some of our crops don't, as you said, would themselves well for that. But on the fuel and fertilizer side, I think people want to see what data and information can do to drive down costs. Mm-hmm. And as you aptly put it on your three classifications, at a grain scale, what do you do to mitigate the impacts of climate? Yeah. So I think that's, very much right where people are seeing the resources here. But one of the specific provisions of the bill calls out 10 areas of technology transfer that the federal government wants to make progress on, and obviously agriculture is one of those key areas. So I hope you'll look at various things and then decide what we can do to. There's so many new services here, and I'm glad this institution, the WSU, has already got a great NSF relationship. Launch was great, but there was not a day that we didn't call them. We called them Saturday, Sunday, holidays, launch. We need, you have to explain this. How do I explain this? And then, the EBS qualified. Anyway, we had many conversations about our state and NSF. And because this really is also a transformation for them, right? How do you keep the basic research mission and yet do more translational science? How do you do both? And this notion of tech hubs versus techs, the continuing the research. Anyway, there's a lot of, you're all familiar with these. This is what you deal with every day, right? This is what you guys deal with every day. And to your point, we had lost our percentage of GDP on research and development. Our nation had slipped. And so this was about upping that investment, particularly in an information age, upping the investment in research and development and then making it more translational. So I feel like we got a lot of the right resources on the table, and now we need, academia and partners like agriculture to take advantage of that and use the next generation of whether it's AI or climate intelligent resource, whatever you want to call it. It's basically using science in the next phase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, it's a really nice transition, Senator, because the next group we're going to go see is a group that's looking at clean energy, specifically hydrogen. But the questions around fuel cost and fertilizer costs are very closely connected to our ability to manufacture, store, and use hydrogen. And we aren't going to talk about it today, but the floor of this building that we're on focuses exclusively on water, mostly on water modeling, water quality. The questions about aquifer recharge are questions that these guys have been studying very seriously. And so water questions are very regional, but Pacific Northwest has very different issues than the Midwest. Our hope, my hope, is that one of the things the CHIPS Act can do for us is to help us see opportunities to link these groups that are already working on really big questions, but to link them more effectively through additional resources. We're excited about that opportunity.
To link who?
To link our the dozen people that we've got that look exclusively at water, to the 15 or so that you're going to see that are looking at hydrogen. storage, production and storage, to questions around agriculture and AI, right? I think there's a lot of really interesting questions at the interfaces between those scientific groups, and finding catalysts through financial resources or funding to bring them together is one of my hopes that I think the CHIPS Act will allow us to do. So
we're very interested, well, listen, we're big fans of Ed and Schweitzer and what they do and making the grid more secure. I think that's another area that maybe not be the topic of today, but you should think about, is just that we think that there's important broadband, smart grid, intelligent work that needs to continue to be done. The notion that you build that kind of system, you can detect fire on the lines and be able to shut them down, and obviously move power around more efficiently, but it's really clear we need to have a better security layer. So that's something you guys are key in, and you should think about that. The material science side, you should also think about, because we feel like there should be a partnership. Obviously, our state is a leader in both the truck transportation and aviation transportation side of making lighter weight materials. But we feel that there is this whole next step of thermoplastic manufacturing that is really driving down the cost of manufacturing that we need to be smarter and more sophisticated about. So I feel like for us, the world's our oyster. Like, what is it we're going to focus on? And what is it we're going to, we have so many things we could focus on, so I'm very anxious to hear the hydrogen discussion today and hear what they have to say. But it's really, there's, you know, great, strong R&D institutions are gonna help lead the economy of the future, so thank you.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate your ability to your support and making it possible for us to have impact in this space. Sammy is getting super anxious that we're
yes.
We're